Hey, I'm Stevie.
What's up? I'm Monty J.
And you're listening to the Bookshelf Boyfriends podcast,
where we take a deep dive with your favorite contemporary romance authors,
asking them questions about everything from their writing process to their reading habits, plus so much more.
Join us as we help you find your next bookshelf boyfriend. Happy 1 year anniversary to the Bookshelf Boyfriends podcast. Cue cheering from the audience. Bookshelf Boyfriends, 1 year of episodes. Super exciting. We have another amazing anniversary episode for you guys today.
Day three.
And it's just a flying by. It feels like just yesterday we were starting this bad boy up, and here we are.
And for my secret baby surprise baby lovers, we have a secret baby surprise baby giveaway.
Super exciting. Make sure to go check that out on our Instagram.
Of course, I wish I could win.
Right. We are super excited to talk with this author today. I know Stevie has been reading her books recently. Well, I mean, I guess for like the past month or so.
More like the last 6 years.
Yeah. And so I know we're super excited about that. And it should be fun. Stevie, do you have any like announcements that you need to say or anything like that?
Not yet. You'll find out at the end of the episode who is tomorrow's episode.
Very exciting.
Which I'm super excited about. I think that's really it. We're on Patreon.
Make sure to go check that out. If you cannot donate to the Patreon, then leave us a review on whatever it is you listen to. Subscribe and tell your friends about us. I'm trying to be like Oprah and trying to take everybody's car. On the way to work. I mean, I would want to listen to me on the way to work. I talk to myself on the way. I mean, I don't have to go anywhere for work because I work from home, but I talk to myself in the car.
So. I don't go anywhere for work. I just work from home.
But, you know, whatever. Same thing.
But I talk to myself on my way to the office.
I talk to myself on the way to places. I don't even know exactly where it is that I go, but I'll be talking to myself on the way to CVS after this episode
to get her some emergency
so I can get some medicine so I don't die. But okay, so that's all for me, and if that's all from you, then I'll go ahead and read the bio for Miss Tia Louise. Tia Louise is a USA Today best-selling award-winning author of sexy, sweet military romance, small town romance, single parent romance, and romantic suspense novels. After being a teacher, a book editor, a journalist, and finally a magazine editor, she started writing love stories and never stopped. Louise lives in the Midwest with her trophy husband, two teenage geniuses, and one grumpy cat. Without further ado, let's go talk to Tia Louise. Thank you so much for joining us on the Bookshelf Boyfriends podcast for our anniversary episode. Tia Louise, welcome, welcome.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much. This is so exciting.
Thank you. We are super stoked to talk to you. Listen, Stevie has like, this is the one you were talking to me about the other day, about like when she read it, she was like, I was not expecting the steam in this book.
No, we're talking about, that's trouble.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. She was like, talking the other day about reading it, and she was like, I was not expecting this steam. She's like 3 o'clock in the morning and she's messaging me and she's like, I had to put the book down. I was like, all right then. So we're super excited to be able to chat with you. We're gonna go ahead and jump right into questions, and I'm gonna take the Twist of Fate one. Okay. So Twist of Fate is a small town friends to lovers second chance story about Scout and Daisy. Is it Scott? Scout. It is Scout.
Scout.
Right? I was like, for a second, my dyslexia was like, that's Scott. And I was like, wait, no, it's not. Scout and Daisy. And these two were always like just friends until 1 week they broke all of those rules. They were like, fuck it. And so like, what was the inspiration for this story?
Well, Scout is the younger brother for a character that I had written in my book, This Much Is True, which I released in 2020. And that was kind of a road trip romance where the main character is like a single dad. It's sort of a grumpy sunshine romance where the single dad, and he's like angry and like going home to get the truth about something that happened to him. So he swings through, he's driving from San Francisco all the way back to like all the way across the country to South Carolina coast. And, and so he dips down on the way to pick up his brother, his little brother, who's in LA trying to become an actor, and that's Scout. And so he picks up Scout and they set off on this road trip. Well, what he didn't know when he left San Francisco is that a girl had fallen asleep in the back seat of the car. Like, she got drunk and fell asleep. And
that's iconic. Yeah,
and so she wakes up, she sits up in the back seat of the car halfway between San Francisco and LA. And he's like,
pass out.
Yeah, he's like, what? You know, so he nearly crashes because she sits up, you know, like a ghost. And then he's like, gonna leave her there. And she's like, you can't leave me. I don't have a phone. I don't even have shoes. And So he says, okay, well, I'll take you to Los Angeles and leave you there. But then when they get to Los Angeles, Scout's like, you know, we can't leave her here, you know? And so They put her in the car. And so she ends up going on the road trip with him. So, and she ends up with the, you know, well, I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah.
But I bet you can guess what happens. Anyway, so,
I love this.
Yeah. So everybody loves Scout. I mean, Scout is like kind of the comic relief in that story because His personality is real, like, charming and silly and kind of bubbly, and you know, and he's really hot, and so everybody fell in love with him, right? And they're like, please, please, please do a story for Scout. And I was like, don't worry, gotcha, already had it in mind. So that's kind of where that came from. And so I kind of wove through that story this idea that he had left a girl back home. Mm-hmm. So part of his motivation for wanting to, you know, go back with his brother was to kind of see, you know, if she was still there, what happened and stuff. Yeah. And so that's kind of where all that came from. So that's kind of how that all grew up. And the thing about it, which was funny, is I had two other books, When We Touch and When We Kiss, that are related because the heroines for both of those books are best friends.
Yeah.
And so I had written When We Touch in 2017, and that was a USA Today bestseller. It was before all my books were in KU. And so I'd written When We Touch. So then I wrote When We Kiss, which was her best friend's story. And I kind of moved on to a different, you know, series after that, Boss of Me and those, actually, no, I'm sorry, Make You Mine and those books. And, but I kind of, you know, after a while, if you don't really kind of keep up with them, books kind of just sort of, you know, they kind of drift away. Right.
Yeah.
And so, so I wanted to try to bring those books back because those books were really fun and readers loved them. And so I pulled Daisy out of those stories. She's a small character. She's a minor character in When We Touch and When We Kiss, because, the heroine in When We Touch, has a bakery, and she's like, and so I had her on like this little row of storefronts, and like the first storefront was a general store with like a sandwich shop in it, and then the second was a hardware store, then Imberly's bakery, and then right next to her was Daisy's antique shop. So that was in those two books, and I just this little minor character in both of those books. And so I was like, you know what, and so I was trying to think, I was like, are there any stray characters who I could just kind of pick up and you know, and kind of just to link them? So maybe people would go back and check out those two books if they want to know more about Daisy and Oceanside and all that location where she has her store. So, because Daisy in When We Touch is a single mom, you know, and she kind of has an antique store, but I don't really get into a lot about her other than Imberly is also a single mom, so their daughters play together. And that's kind of as far as I went with it. And so I didn't really get a lot into it. So it was fun to kind of go back and bring her in and go back to that town, because that town had a bunch of quirky characters and just was hilarious. And so that's where Daisy came from. So yeah, so it was really funny. So I had to do the antiques thing, you know, somehow to get her into antiques. And so that's how all that happened. So I kind of, you know, I know, it's just like, woo, it's all.
I would, my brain would have literally exploded trying to do that. But I literally,
well, it's kind of fun though, because if you have existing characters and you can kind of go back, then you already have this world there, you know. The tricky part is just trying to figure out a way to loop them together that makes sense, you know, and yeah. that'll fit. You know, that's kind of the hard part. It's just trying to fit it in a way that makes sense. So that's, you know,
exploded.
Right. So that when you go back, you'd be like, oh, you know, I mean, it's not seamless. I mean, I'm sure if you really want to dig deep, you might find some places where it doesn't quite fit the lineup perfectly, but it's close enough. I mean, you know, it's for fun. It's not for historical documentation.
Exactly.
It's fiction, guys.
Exactly. So this story has a 4-year time jump about halfway through the book. And I wanted to know, like, what made you want to add that time jump and why you thought it was so important to Scout and Daisy's story?
Well, I wanted, because, you know, because I was trying to fit it around This Much Is True, you yeah. know, and This Much Is True takes place in the future of the story. And so I had two choices. I could either do it in flashback, which I don't know. I mean, different people have their different likes and dislikes. I don't really like reading a lot of flashback scenes. I have some authors who I love their books, but I kind of feel like if I'm reading their book and then they do a flashback chapter or something, I almost feel like it kind of pulls me out of the story, you know? Yeah. I don't know. Maybe that's just my problem, but I kind of don't like reading flashbacks. So I didn't want to write flashbacks. So I figured the best way to do it and would be just to kind of have the beginning be how they knew each other as high schoolers. And yeah. well, actually it's not high school, because I have that short story that's out there, You Walked In, mm-hmm. is a very, very short, like less than 20,000 words intro story that was included in a charitable anthology. Yeah. And so I had written that for a charity anthology back at Christmas. So that's really them in high school. So the beginning of the story is right after they've finished college and Scout's getting ready to go to Hollywood, right, to try to be an actor. And Daisy's just getting started in the antiques business, and she's trying really hard to get on with like this big antiques road show kind of. I was thinking, like, picturing like an HGTV type of setup, you know.
An American Pickers is what, anytime anybody says like antiquing, that's what I think of.
Right. Actually, I was thinking, you know how like Chip and Joanna Gaines, you know how they like started out fixing houses, but then they did a magazine and a TV show and all this stuff.
Now they have their network.
Right. Yeah, I know, right? And so that was kind of the image that I was thinking of, because I was thinking like, okay, so she's dreaming of getting in with this business that has a magazine, a TV show, you know, and all this stuff but in the antiques world. And so that's how she's starting out. So she's doing like, she's fixing up a house and like using antiques and showing her, you know, how she can find things and put them all together and doing all this stuff. And Spencer is kind of her boss at that time. He's the one kind of, I don't know, guiding her through this process, and they're friends, and he's trying to help her get the job because he's there already. And he's like a big CEO in that company. And he's kind of like, okay, for some reason he likes Daisy, thinks she's cute or whatever. I mean, like in a friendly way, and wants to help her. So he kind of is helping her, you know, get up to snuff so she can apply and hopefully get hired. And he ends up helping her get hired. So yeah, so that's kind of how that all went.
I love it.
But I mean, in order to set that up, to lay that foundation, I had to go back to that like period of time right after college. So it's like, I don't know, what's it about 3 or 4 or 5 chapters there. And then you come to where we are, where the cross country road trip kind mm-hmm. of fits in there. And then you pick up when he gets back.
It's like a game of fucking Tetris. It's like Tetris.
Well, I think it worked. I mean, I know some people are like, I hate time jumps, and it's like, well, I mean, but sometimes they're necessary, because I can't write a 500,000 page book where I go through all the things, you know. You kind of almost have to say, okay, this is where we left and this is where we picked up, and you know, you kind of have to finesse it so you don't feel like, what, you know, so it makes sense. And I feel like, fingers crossed, people seem to think it works. So I mean, I don't know. Hopefully it doesn't bother anybody too much.
This couple goes through a lot before they have their happily ever after. And did anything surprise you about Scout and Daisy when you Scout? I keep Scout and Daisy, like when you were writing them.
Well, I feel like I had a pretty good grasp of these guys and where I wanted to go with them. So not really surprising. It's really always for me, it's always fun when like minor characters sort of present themselves as possibilities for future books. So yeah. Maybe the biggest surprise out of Twist of Fate was Spencer, because
yeah.
He kind of ended up emerging as sort of this grumpy billionaire, kind of crusty, you know, he and Daisy kind of butt heads because she's very sentimental and excited about whenever she's able to find an heirloom or something for a family, she gets so happy. And Spencer's just like, what are you talking about? It's junk. You know, this was lost yeah. in somebody's attic. This is, you know, I don't know why you're so fired up about this. Anyway, he just kind of, he's the Simon Cowell of the group because he's just business as usual. You know, he's like, that's just how it is. And Daisy's like, you know, the Paula, I guess. She's very hugging and so, and gets all excited and crying with the people. And Spencer's just like, what is going on right now? And so he kind of emerged as like this perfect grumpy billionaire who needs somebody to take him down a couple notches. And so he ended up being, you know, the perfect character for the next book that ended up being trouble. Right. And I actually hadn't planned to write a book for him. I was just like, by the time I got to the end of the book, I was like, oh my gosh, Jocelyn and Spencer are like perfect for each other. I've got to put these two guys together. So, so that was kind of, I guess, the biggest surprise in that book. So,
so speaking of Spencer, Stevie is going to handle some questions about Trouble, yes. which is the super exciting book. So Stevie, go ahead and take that.
So Trouble released on July 17th. And this is Spencer and Jocelyn's story. So for the readers who haven't read, can you give them a brief synopsis of what they can expect from this book?
Well, so we've kind of already talked about Spencer. He's the super grumpy, kind of arrogant guy.
Simon Cowell vibes.
Jocelyn is redhead, feisty. She's Daisy's older cousin. They're cousins. And she's a little bit older than her. But and so she meets Spencer briefly in Twist of Fate and they just do not, they're oil and water. And mostly because, you know, he's super cold and she's super, you need to get that stick out of your ass. So so they're kind of like, they do not, you know. And so then Trouble is sort of their story about, you know, she ends up becoming a massage therapist, but she was originally a florist. So she's a little bit of a butterfly, right? So she starts out as a florist and then she's like, okay, maybe I'll be a massage therapist. So she's still kind of going through the whole self-discovery, you know, what really makes
me. Like very much like a temp vibe to me. Like have you ever seen Monster in Law? She reminds me so much of J-Lo in Monster in Law.
Yes, like, he would be a dog walker. Like, I mean, she would totally try that.
She walks as a receptionist and like, that was the vibe she gave me.
Yeah, she hasn't quite found that thing yet, but she's excellent. You know, the thing is, she's really good at everything she does. And this whole like florist thing that she did, Daisy pulls her in for this big gala that they're having. And so she ends up bumping into Spencer again because, you know, it's for Spencer's business. Yeah. And so they reconnect. He gets injured. She's like, well, I'm really trying to be a massage therapist. So if you ever need anybody and they live in the same town. And so I don't want to spoil too much of the story, but basically he ends up needing to hire her because she falls on him and nearly breaks his back. And then she's really sorry. She feels terrible. Well, she's up on a ladder and the ladder gets all out of whack and he tries to catch her and ends up on the ground. And so she feels guilty that she hurt him. So she's like, let me do this and I'll, you know, help you out. And then the sparks kind of fly. And so then he's like, well, maybe I do need a massage therapist. But the problem is, you know, she's like, I'm not sleeping with you if you're my client. Yeah. And he's like, well, don't worry. I never sleep with the same woman more than once. And he's kind of got this rule about how he never sleeps with the same woman more than once. So they have too much to drink. They end up in bed together. She gets upset that she did break her rule. So she leaves. And then he's like, wakes up and she's gone. And he's like, wait a minute. So it's kind of like a push pull between the two of them of, you know, he's like, I don't do this. And she's like, I don't do this, but then they keep doing it. So it's a lot of fun, you know, I don't know. Right. And then there's this kind of other sub story going on. And Spencer kind of has a really terrible past from his childhood, but I didn't, I don't want to spoil that part because, but it really explains, well, I guess it's not really a spoiler, is his dad was super abusive and he was taken from his home and put with a foster family or a foster. And it was an old man who actually did, had like this huge house full of antiques and he was super rich and basically was really cold. And as I was writing it, I kind of was like, well, I'd already thought all that part out. And like, so his stepfather's name is Drake because that actually means dragon in some language. I can't remember which one, but I kind of pictured him being raised by this old man who was like a dragon. You know how dragons will like collect all this treasure and then just sit on it and hoard it. And like, you know what I'm talking about? And so that's kind of how I imagined that guy, you know, being. And so Spencer kind of was brought up in this very cold, like kind of very cold environment. He was not treated, you know, first he's taken away from his family.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so he's got all this stuff that has kind of got him with this super hard shell, you know, Mr. Freeze is what they call him. And so, and Jocelyn is this fiery redhead. And so she kind of melts Mr. Freeze's heart. And it's really fun to see him come around and be a really, really good guy. He really actually ends up being a really good guy despite his.
I love it. I love it.
Despite his cold exterior, he actually is a good guy.
Those are my favorites.
He's my favorite.
I know, he's sort of the villain, but then he's like, and that was the thing, as I was writing it, I was like, oh my gosh, this is totally a Beauty and the Beast story, because he's this growly beast, and he's like, stay out of my stuff, and you know, when they have to, she ends up having to stay with him briefly. And so he's like, you know, don't go over there. And, you know, anyway, and so she's just like melts his heart, you know, and it ends up being like, you know, she has to go back and save him. So, because he's, you know, realized the way he's living, he's turning into the dragon that raised him, because he's like pushes everybody away and doesn't have any relationships. So it's kind of fun. It ended up having that whole, you know,
I'm here for it.
Yeah.
So Spencer and Jocelyn are actually my favorite couple now. I'm convinced.
Thank you. That makes me so happy. I feel so hard for them too. As I was writing it, I was like, oh my gosh, I love them so much, because, you know, it sounds like, you know, it's not actually, so, you know, you can kind of be like, oh, it's too much push pull, but it's actually not. Their push pull kind of works, you know, because it's like, they're both changing each other, you know, and it's like, I really love it. And she's, Jocelyn's such a great character. I love what a good friend she is. And she's just really kind of, you know, determined she has worth and she's not going to let him just treat her like he does everybody else. And so I just love her. She's so much fun. And then Spencer, you know, he seems like a jerk, but he's so not a jerk. And you just want to see him get his happily ever after, because his life was so shitty when he was a child.
It's very ironic though, because we just recorded with Harlow Ray too.
Oh yeah.
And she's the one who started, after we were done recording, she's the one that started talking about Trouble.
Yeah.
And did she? Oh,
me and MJ like literally got on Amazon and purchased the book
immediately. Like while we were, if I'm not mistaken, that was well, A, I was probably gonna read it anyways, and B, it was your release day.
Or yes, like, and it was because of the whole
Amazon had like fucked up your rank.
Oh god, they tried to kill me. They kind of did a little bit. I mean, it still made it to the top 100. Thank you all. You all are amazing. But I released it, and it took 3 days for them to get it categories and ranks. So it was basically, you couldn't find it in the Kindle store. Like it didn't show up. I mean, it was having a ton of sales and everybody was amazing. And I was just over here crying. I was like, because a big part of, you know, releases is when it's doing well and it's very visible.
Yeah.
People who maybe have never heard of you before will see it and be like, oh, I'll give this a try, you know? And so that's a big part of releasing, is having that visibility so that people who've never, you know, read one of your books might jump in. And it was just not there. It was just totally gone. And I love this book so much. And I was like, why is Amazon trying to kill this book? Because it's so good. I want everybody to read it.
you proved them wrong, because as soon as the ranks came up, it was in top 100.
It was. And I thank you all so much for that. It was just so, I was so frustrated. Cause you know, you write a book and it's like, I feel like I just want everybody to read it. You know, I mean, I'm always like, I don't care. I just want everybody to read this because it's so much fun and I love it so much. And I want everybody to fall in love with these characters as much as me. And that's always kind of, you know, me. I guess that's everybody. Everybody feels, all the authors feel that way. We all love our babies. So
what was your favorite thing about writing Spencer and Jocelyn?
Oh man. So, I love having a little bit of suspense in my books. My first big series, the One to Hold series that came out in like from 2013 to I think 2017, the last book came out. That was like my first big project. And it was like a big, long romantic suspense series. And I just love that so much. Not all of my books have suspense in them. I mean, some of them are just angsty. Some of them are second chance. Some of them are small town. I mean, like Twist of Fate is not a suspense story. It's friends to lovers. It's like second chance, angsty, super hilarious. But I love that little bit of suspense. So kind of my favorite part, I think, was like the whole dealing with the bad guy part. Yeah. And so I just love writing those scenes. And like, I had that whole idea of the bathroom scene where she's hiding and the stupid automatic toilet flushes. I was like, and I had that thought on the toilet. I was in a restaurant and I was using the toilet. And you know how sometimes it'll go off when you're still going and you're like, you feel like, am I about to get sucked down the toilet, which is so dumb, but you know, I hate that anyway. And
that's actually kind of like, that needs to be in a horror movie.
Right.
Like where they now have like these automatic toilets and these bitches are always hiding in the bathroom and they're standing on top of the toilet, like thinking that he's not going to know that they're in there. And I'm like, why is this toilet not going off? Because I literally like breathe in the wrong direction in the bathroom and the automatic flusher is like done. Like,
I know it's like you shift positions and all of a sudden it's like, and I'm always like, no, it's getting on me. Anyway.
Exactly.
I know automatic toilets are the worst, but that was so much fun. So I had that part and it was so funny. I came out of the bathroom and I told my husband, I was like, oh my gosh, I just have the best idea for a scene. And he's like, okay. And I told him, he's like, oh, that's pretty cool. I like that. And I was like, okay, yes. And so I'm like putting it in my phone so I don't forget, you know,
that's me.
I mean, it's so funny, but yeah, I really enjoyed the suspense part. And of course I love like Ollie, the little boy. Little kids are so much fun. I love having little kids in the story because they just crack me up, you know, they're so funny. Yeah. And anyway, that's all.
Yeah.
You talked about writing in 2013. You know, the first book that I ever read by you was One to Hold.
Mm-hmm.
That's how long ago.
That book was huge. And I've got a big surprise coming for everybody because I'm going to recover that whole series and relaunch it in September. I don't know when this is going to be out there.
September 8th.
So close. Cause, September 15th. I mean, I'll have to go ahead and upload the new covers, before, because it takes a few days for it to update on Amazon, but I've got this huge, I'm going to recover the whole series. It's always been wide on all retailers as long as it's been available. But I'm going to try it out in Kindle Unlimited because all my books really are in Kindle Unlimited now.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go ahead and just put them all in there and see how they do. And kind of do that. So I've got a big plan because that's such a fun series. And I think everybody will really enjoy it. It's, you know, and so thank you. Thanks for reading.
Derek and Melissa.
Coming.
That was one of my fans. So I've been, obviously I'm older than MJ, but I've been in the romance reading since like, I guess 2012.
Okay.
Right when Abby Glines released the Vincent Brothers and all those books. So that's
everything was kind of really breaking right then.
Exactly. Yeah. That was back when Jennifer Armentrout was writing romance books.
The aliens.
She actually had a contemporary romance book.
Oh yeah.
I was still on Wattpad in 2012. So.
Well, that's when didn't Hopeless come out in 2012?
Yep.
Yeah. Hope so that was everything was really breaking right then. All those.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, right. So I jumped in. I was a year later, but you know, that's okay.
It's what got me on my kick to romance and I haven't left it. So.
Right. I know. It's so funny to think that so much has happened. So much has passed, so much time, you know, so many people. It's cool. It's really neat. I've enjoyed it. I have loved writing adult romance. It's the readers are so fun and interactive. Yeah. And I just love my readers. They'll send me cards. They send me funny presents. I Some blogger like gave me a Lady Boner Award and the prize was like this glass dildo. And I'm like, I still have it up in the wrapper. I'm like, what am I supposed to do with this?
You gotta put it out.
I can't put out my award.
You have to
keep my award under wraps. Anyway, it's hilarious. And so, I mean, I'm like, romance readers are the best. They are so much fun. I just love them so much. They're hilarious and they're interactive and they tell you what they think. And that's awesome. And I just love it. I think it's great. So.
Me too.
So if you could pick one of your books to become a TV or movie, which one would you pick and who would you your dream cast be?
So I was thinking about this and I think of all of the books that would make really great movies, I think the ones that would really do the best would be like the Dirty Players series. Mm-hmm. That's the one, it's kind of a royal romance, but it's romantic suspense and it's got these two sisters who are con artists and they like, you know, so it kind of starts in Miami and they're like con artists where they like do these cons on casinos. And yeah, that was so much fun because I was actually researching how to like, you know, cheat casinos, right, like in history. Right. So that's, you know, this is the funny story about, they always say writers, if anything happens to me, destroy my hard drive, right?
Absolutely.
But, if I ever get arrested, destroy my hard drive.
No, but, I know for a fact that my government CEI agent who is like in my computer and like in my phone, I'm on some type of watch list. Like I got it. And he's like, I just know that he's like looking at my browser history and he's like, yeah, like I know, I like, we need to keep an eye on this one because I think that she might be plotting something crazy. Like,
oh, no, it's not. But yeah, well, so that's, you know, I researched all these fun like cons for casinos. So you have all these great costumes of them, you know, in night and, you know, evening gowns, doing all this stuff where they're rigging the roulette wheel, you know, and then, you know, so it goes from Miami and then they get taken to Monaco. It's not really called Monaco, but it's Monaco. It's fictional Monaco, where they're going to do this con on the crown prince. And then, you know, the sister falls for the brother. So it's got, you know, all these like fun. And then of course she gets kidnapped because she doesn't do what she's supposed to do. And it's all this government affairs. So she gets taken to the Caribbean. So it's like, you know, and then there's killings and then there's Formula One races. And I really think that would be the best for movies just because there's so much happening.
I think it would be too.
So many things to see. Well, it's four books. So, you know, there's four books that you're dealing with, but I think that could kind of all work for like a movie or like even a streaming short 8 episode.
All right, passion flicks.
Yeah, totally. Like, well, I was thinking kind of like, I mean, it's not the Queen's Gambit, but you know how the Queen's Gambit was like eight episodes, miniseries type thing, something like that, or Bridgerton. Oh my God, or like Bridgerton, you know, but like, you know, kind of spread it out because then you could kind of do the whole, you know, start to finish thing.
It would be like four series. You could do like four seasons, one for each book.
Right. Oh yeah, I will take anything. But I do think, I have always thought since those books came out, I'm like, this would be the greatest show because this would be so much fun to watch. And you know, and so because it has two love stories, you know, the brothers and the sisters, and so, you know, you've got a lot, and then you've got all that gorgeous scenery, and then, you know, you're kind of going back and forth and it's so much excitement and there's kidnappings and murder attempts.
Budget for that though. The budget for that though.
Right. Well, you know, you could kind of fudge some things, I think. Although I would like to be on location in Monaco. I will sign up for that part.
She's like, take me with you.
Absolutely.
I'll just bring everybody drinks or whatever. I don't care. I'll just hide just to go. But
I want to be in a director's chair. I want to be like.
Leave that to the experts. But no, that was super fun. I loved writing that series. That series was such a blast. And like, that's what I'm saying, because I really kind of love doing romantic suspense because it's so much fun. And so that was a lot of fun. So that one would probably be my choice.
All right. So what's next for 2021?
Well, I have kind of a top secret. Well, I already spoiled part of it because I told you.
I feel like you are so bad at keeping secrets.
I know. I really am. And so I have to like zip, watch it. But so September, we're going to show the whole one, unveil the gorgeous. It's so gorgeous. Y'all are going to die. New covers. Lori Jackson helped me do them all. And she's so good. She does all of my covers now. But they're gorgeous. They're just so gorgeous. So she helped me redo all those. And then, so that's September. And then my next release is actually going to be in December. And it's kind of part of a top secret group project that will be announced.
Oh, soon, I like that.
But not yet. So, and we are so excited about it. It's going to be, and I am like writing that book right now. And I am so in love. It is so awesome. And it's like, again, small town, second chance. This one's going to be kind of first loves. So it's going to be first loves, first kiss, first everything. Wink, wink. You know, anyway, for both of them, you know, and I've never really written a story where both the male and female character were like first with each other. So that I'm kind of looking forward to that, kind of going into that. But I'll have to be careful with that because, you know, they're going to have to obviously be young. So I don't want to go too crazy because people get like freaked out when you write about teenagers having sex. And I get that. I'm not saying you need to be writing about that, but I'm saying, you know, I'll still, you know, we'll figure that out. I may have to have a little mini flashback, not a whole flashback chapter. But
at the same time, though, like teenagers have sex, though. Like,
well, I mean, it's true. They do. And so I haven't gotten to that part yet. So I'll have to see how I can kind of finesse that out. But anyway, so, but there's also kind of a twist in there and kind of, he has this secret that he's been keeping anyway. So they kind of part ways and then they come back together.
I'm going to ask them if they spoil this talking.
It's so good, y'all. I am so in love with this story. It's just so, it's exciting and fun. And so she's like a a criminal psychologist. Okay, and so it picks up with, he's going back to this small coastal town where he used to spend the summers because his family is super rich. So they have like this big mansion on this small island. And she's, the suspect that she had been treating has gone missing and is writing like threatening emails and stuff to her. And they're like, okay, you need to go out of town until we get this person back in custody because this person wants to hurt you. So she's frustrated because she's like, I'm not afraid of my patients. I just need to talk to this person. They're not going to hurt me, but they're like, no. So they send her away back to her hometown. So she goes back to kind of quote hide, and he's going back to kind of check on this old man that he'd been treating and stuff. And they're going to cross paths, and then it's all just going to be, and it's going to be so great. And
I super exciting. I can't wait to read it.
Y'all are going to love it. So
it's going to be, I can't wait to read it. It is. Moving on to writing questions.
Okay.
When did you first realize that you wanted to be a writer / author?
Well, that's okay. So that's kind of two different things, because honestly, when I was a little kid, I always loved writing, and I would like, my mom loves to tell how I would like read a book and then like start writing. Like I wrote like a 12-page, I guess, fan fiction about Little Women when I was like little. Oh! I was like 9 or something.
I loved it
so much. And why didn't Joe get with Lori? Dang it. Anyway, I couldn't understand that.
It's because during that time, it felt women empowerment and like women didn't need no man. And I think it was because the author wanted to stick with the theme, like the thematic, like the theme of like women empowerment and that kind of thing. And had she had ended up with him, it would have taken that away.
Probably.
The romance
community demands it. She could have changed him. Anyway,
romantic in me wanted that too, so it's fine.
Well, that's the thing. And then I wrote, like, it's so hilarious. I don't even know where it is anymore, but like when I was like 9, I wrote like a comic book called Fury Woman, and it was about this lady scientist who'd spilled acid, and her face was all, and she had this giant eyebrows, and she kind of looked like Boris and Natasha, you know, with this giant eyebrows. And I swear, I remember like my black ballpoint pen, and I would scribble, and I was like, golly, I was kind of obsessed. So I always like wrote, but back then, I mean, really this whole publishing revolution is pretty new. I mean, it really started around 2011 with the Kindle of actually being able to make a living as an author. I mean, up until about 2011, there was just, you couldn't do it. I mean, even people who were traditionally published, there was only maybe a handful of even those authors who could actually just write full time. A lot of authors, even, you know, you write when you're not doing your full time job. And I mean, that's hard. I mean, I did start out doing that, and that is just hard. And, you're never with your family, you know, you never see anybody. It's really difficult. So, So really, I never dreamed of being an author because I was just like, it's like starting a rock and roll band. You know, I mean, it's like the chances of being able to do anything with that are slim to none. So yeah. I actually was a journalist for a while. And so I wrote for the newspaper. And so when my daughters were born, I became freelance. So I started working from home because my daughters are like a year apart. And so we were just like, ugh, might as well just stay home because it's like it pay more in daycare than I would make. So, So I started being a freelance writer. So I started writing from home. And then when they went to school, when they started preschool and kindergarten and all, I was able to start doing more because I obviously had more free time. And so that was in around 2012. And I was able to start like really kind of doing more writing. And, you know, back then people were still blogging a lot. I don't know. And so like in 2011 and 2012, I was actually trying to be traditionally published because at that time they were still telling us independent publishing. Oh, if you go indie, you might as well just kiss your career goodbye. You know, you'll never work in this town, you know, traditional guys were very anti-indie at that time and just very hateful. And so I was like, well, you know, and I actually did get a literary agent and I did get offered a publishing contract from Simon & Schuster that I ultimately turned down because I self-published a manuscript that my agent couldn't sell.
Yeah.
And she really liked it. She was like, if you want to try this, this is the book to try it with. And it was actually a YA novel. And so I did, and it blew up. And I saw immediately that I had way better chance of making a career that I could live on going indie than I could with the traditional offer that they were giving me. Yeah. And so, and the thing with traditional, you know, those contracts are really, well, I don't want to bore everybody to death, but they're not very favorable to the author. I'll just put it like that. I mean, yeah. You don't get paid squat and they have the rights to your stuff forever and you have no say in anything and they can change your release date. They can change your cover. They have all the control. And so I actually listened to Margaret Atwood do a TED talk about, she didn't understand why all authors were not independent authors. I mean, like she did this whole thing about the minnows and the whales and she was hilarious. And
yeah,
after hearing that, I was like, golly, Margaret Atwood is an author that I've always really respected, you know, and I read a lot of her books in college as an English major. And I was like, if she's saying this, because she was like, if I were just starting out today, I would be an independent author. And so I was like, well, that does it. Because I had a bunch of blogger friends, author friends, we'd all talk and stuff. And they were like, you need to go completely indie and you need to do this, you need to do this. Get away from that traditional thing, you know, get off that.
Well, I think that indie publishing made traditional publishing a little more like open to certain things, right? Because I mean, like you
definitely
said, traditional publishers are not like in favor of the artist or like the actual like creative process itself, right? Because they can change, like they can have you change things in your manuscript and all of this stuff, right?
Absolutely.
And like the only people, and I'm being completely honest, like the only people that, I mean, not now, but then, the only people that I felt like could really do like traditional publishing and do it well were like people who were like already, like were iconic names. Like Stephen King is signed with Simon & Schuster. So like, right. And but he's like a very like iconic person. Like it doesn't matter what that man writes. Nobody's going to tell him what he can and cannot publish.
Yeah,
like,
it's true. You're right.
And so indie publishing made a name for romance genres. Like it showed traditional publishing that, oh, well, you know, maybe this does work. Maybe we shouldn't be as like so nitpicky on certain things when we're, you know, doing manuscripts or whatever, because look at how these sales are for indie publishing. And so then they had to get with the program. And now there's like a ton more, you know, hybrid authors that both do independent and traditional.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And I mean, indie authors changed traditional publishing with the whole new adult genre, you know.
Absolutely.
I mean, Tamara Weber, who is a friend of mine, she's really great, wrote Easy, you remember? And they didn't even, there was no new adult genre at that time. And they were like, we don't know where to put this because it's about, and it's so dumb because Friends, the TV show Friends, I mean, and I mean, think about it, I guess, even How I Met Your Mother. And there's all these super popular, super successful television shows
that are all new adult.
about new adult characters, about these characters who are, are out of college or in college or just getting out of college or whatever in that age, in that group. Yeah. And there were no books for them. There were no books for people who loved that genre. And it's like, it just seems so obvious. So she obviously changed that and created the new adult genre.
And the fact that, listen, I really hope that, okay, so I'm pretty sure everybody and their mother has seen Sex Life on Netflix. Like, it's like,
oh, yeah, BB's thing.
Okay. I hope within every fiber of my being that that is like a catalytic version of 50 Shades of Grey for like motion picture TV, that this is like a catalyst moment for Netflix and like Hulu and like all of streaming services to see how well books like Chapters About 44 Men and like romance genre things can do on the screen. I'm going to tell you right now, everyone in America was watching Sex Life, okay? That's like what we want to watch. It's what we read.
Well, I think, and even before that, you know, you had Bridgerton, and before that, you had Outlander. Mm-hmm. And am I forgetting anything? I mean, they've kind of, they've been slowly, like Dumpling. Remember Dumpling? Although, I mean, that was YA, but still, you know.
But Before We Fall.
Yes, I think they're kind of
slowly. Which was literally a Harry Styles fanfic.
Yeah.
That was literally.
I think they'll come around. I mean, you know, as these shows continue to do well and are, and you know, are well received, I mean, they're, those producer guys are all about the money. Whatever's going to make money, they're going to go with it.
And I hope that people can see that these will make money. The fact that the New York Times doesn't recognize like
romance authors
in general is just like, it literally like blows my mind. Like I was so angry for, who was it? It was Jennifer
Armentrout who got snubbed by New York Times.
I was so angry about that. I was like, and what was it? A Crown of Gilded Thorns?
Yeah.
They used to not.
Jay Sterling's one of them.
They changed the rules for making the New York Times bestseller list. I think what they did was they eliminated the ebooks category altogether.
Yeah.
They used to have an ebooks bestseller list. And that's how a bunch of the indie romance authors made the New York Times bestseller list, was with ebooks. And so, because I mean, you know, you can't argue with the popularity of the romance genre, but I mean, they just want to look down on it and act like, you know, it's not real fiction, like, or whatever, which is so stupid. So, you know, you got a man like Philip Roth can write a trashy novel and gets hailed as like the greatest, what was it? Yeah. You know, one of the top five authors, American authors, you know, I don't know.
Of all time.
And it's like, yeah, okay, but you call that literature. If a man writes about sexuality and having sex and all that stuff, it's literature. But if a woman writes about it, it's mommy porn. And that is so offensive to me, because there are romance authors who are just having fun with it and writing, you know, really smutty books and just having a good time. And I have no problem with that. But then there are also people who are writing in the romance genre who are actually really, you know, wanting to tell stories and really, you know, be serious. And I mean, heck, even Ice Planet Barbarians, it's silly and hilarious and tongue in cheek, but it's well written. I mean, it's so, it's super fun to read. I mean, so it's just, it's annoying because it's kind of, you know, it's just, I don't know. I don't want to get on my.
And it's like, I can name like 10 authors right now. Now, I can think of 10 books that would do if they like. So like John Green has like a huge following, right? Like it's, and I'm not saying that his books aren't great, because I do enjoy a John Green novel. It's just in that same retrospect where it's like, I can think of like hundreds of books that I've read in like the indie publishing community or like romance genre that are written by women that are like just as good as the Fault in Our Stars. And it's like, how is his like this amazing like literary experience, but like ours is just smut? And it's like,
he's traditionally published and he's a guy, you know. Nicholas Sparks, although Nicholas Sparks books are not technically romance,
they don't have happily ever after
HEAs, still people are gonna like go crazy over Nicholas Sparks when he's basically writing romances without the HEA always, you know, doesn't always have an HEA. So he's like, I wrote love stories. Oh, whatever. I mean, you know, right in the throat. So frustrating. It is a frustrating thing. Trust me, we all feel it. But you know, we love this. And like I said, I love my readers. They are the best. And they're the ones that make me want to do it. Because I mean, deep down, yeah. I mean, I love telling these stories because I'm an entertainer. I want to tell y'all a story. I can't really sing. I dance horribly. And so, I mean, my creativity is writing. And so yeah. I write these books and just want to entertain people, you know, help them have some fun, maybe help them feel better. I always try to have a little uplifting, you know, kind of message in there. So, yeah. you know, so it's kind of, you know, people really are awesome. And that's what it's really all about. So you kind of have to, and thankfully, I've been able to get to the point where I'm able to do this full time. And, yeah. And so I'm really, you know, you can kind of get bogged down in that stuff and then you just have to say, whatever, it's always the way it's been. And maybe someday people get their head out of their butts and realize that, you know, these are great stories. They're a lot of fun. They're, you know, yeah. people love them. And I just don't like people being insulted or see, I taught English also. So I've had all these crazy jobs, but I was an English teacher first before I went back and became a journalist. Yeah. And so for me, just getting people to read, you know, it's like, just read, because reading just expands your world. It yeah. opens your mind. It teaches you, you know, how to communicate. And I mean, it's just, I don't like when people are put down or insulted for their choice of genre, you know, what they like to read.
Oh my God, same.
Let them read what they want. You know,
if I want to read fairy. If I want to read fairy porn, mind y'all's business. Okay.
Exactly.
Everybody minds his business.
No okay? way.
Because I guarantee that I know how to pronounce a hell of a lot of more stuff than you do. Okay.
Oh, and not only that, you know, you've been introduced to all these different fairies, different Absolutely. People that you might never meet.
Different worlds. Like
different places. Yes. You've gone to different worlds.
You have
worlds.
No idea what that's like. Okay. So mind y'all's business and leave me alone. That's literally how I feel. That's so awesome. Do you have any interesting writing quirks? Like when you sit down to write, like do you have to write at a certain time or like have to wear a certain pair of socks or something?
Well, I do like to have socks on because my feet do get cold. I'm always cold. I saw a sweatshirt somewhere that said always cold on it. And I was like, I have to get that for me because I am. But I do kind of like, if I'm really getting into writing a scene or something, I kind of like to go in the living room because it's like people don't go in there and there's like a coffee table in there and I like hunker down by the like in front of the couch and like work. It's because I feel like it's almost like being in a cave because my regular workspace is like wide open in this room here and it's like yeah. all very open and there's a window right there and it's so bright. Whereas I can go in there and kind of feel like I really am kind of in the space. I don't know yeah. if that's weird, but it helps me. It helps me.
No, okay? It's not.
So fine. I move around a lot, moving around a lot. Sometimes I write on a notebook that kind of helps me. Like if I'm feeling like I'm stuck in a scene,
yeah.
I'll actually get a pen and a notebook. And for some reason, sometimes that'll just unlock it. And it's like, I'll just start writing with ink. Maybe because it's slower, you know, typing is so fast that I can usually keep up with my brain. Yeah. And the writing kind of makes me slow down and kind of I think, you know, about everything. And it'll kind of trigger like you know, and
I can't do that though, because then when I go back to like rewrite, like to trace that back to a computer, I can't read my handwriting. So.
Oh, well, yeah, that's a problem.
Too. I can't do that.
She just wishes I could write for her.
Yeah. She's got amazing handwriting.
Well, yeah, some people do that dictation thing. I've never been able to make that work.
No.
You have to pronounce all the punctuation too. And I'm sure you get used to it. I just.
It's like the dog ran over the, you know, creek.
Period.
Or this, comma. Exclamation point.
Right. And it's like, oh man, that kind of takes me out of the story there.
Yeah, same. I could not.
Like, too much going on.
Oh, yeah.
So what does your family think about your writing and have any of them read any of your books?
Well, okay. So, my immediate family, my husband and my two daughters, my two daughters are like girl boss. They love that.
Girl boss. Yes.
Yeah. They love it. They love that I'm an author and that I do well. They think it's funny because if we like go out some anywhere where there are people there who we don't know and they'll be like, oh, you know, what do you do? And I'm like, oh, well, I'm an author. And they're like, oh, really? What do you write? And it's like romance novels, you know, and I try not to go too far down that road. But anyway, and so they're like, oh, okay. And so they think, you know, your husband is taking care of you. And I mean, my husband has a great job and he does really well, but they always think it's so funny that people just think that I'm just like my little writing hobby. And it's like, you know, it's actually this whole business where I hire editors, cover designers, publicity people, all this, like, it's a full business. And I'm like, that's what I do. But you know, it's funny. And it's just like, so that always cracks me up. My other extended family, different members of my extended family know, but not everybody, just because some people are very, I don't know, judging. So I kind of, some people would be shocked, I say, that I know how babies are made. And it's like, oh, well, yeah. I mean, I'm, it's an very old lady funny. Now. I've got two kids.
Kat, one of our, one of the authors I PA for is a kindergarten teacher.
Okay. Oh.
And okay. Nobody at her work knows.
Right. Yeah. I understand.
But it got worse.
Really weird. I don't know what that's about, because it's like, I don't know, because they'll sit up and they'll watch some terribly violent, horrible thing.
Yep. People will be like, okay. Oh, Game of Thrones.
Yeah, and that's okay. But if it's, you know, a loving couple having sex, then it's not okay. I don't understand. Why is that not okay?
She got a few people that found her, though, because some of her Instagram reels went viral, especially about a ballet bar scene. Oh. And people were popping in our chats, like when we would go live, or so they ended up having to tell her personal family didn't even know what she was doing.
Yeah.
Only her husband knew.
Yeah. That's kind of, that's tough. That is a risk, you know, it's that some people, like, are going to get really upset with you.
I feel like it's a generational, I feel like it's a generational thing. Right.
I think you're right.
Like I talk right. all the time yeah. about how my grandma, my G-ma, I love her. My Southern ass grandma. Right.
Right.
I busted her reading 50 Shades of Grey Thanksgiving. Right. Of like when 50 Shades of Grey was like first out.
And she probably loved it. She was like,
oh bro. So I come in and I'm, you know, we're helping set the table or whatever. And next to her, like, she has like this coffee table and there's like newspapers on it. And I know people are going to eat in the living room, so I'm picking it up or whatever. And I pick up this newspaper and there's like 50 Shades Freed. So it's like, I obviously know that if you have the second one, you already read
the first one.
So I pick it up and I go into the kitchen. She's got like her apron on. She's got her curls, her, oh my God, I will never forget this for the rest of my life. She's got her freaking, what are those things called? Her curlers. Her rollers in, got her rollers in. I go to the kitchen and she's mashing mashed potatoes. And I'm like, Grandma, I was like, what's this? And she was like, oh, that's just your aunt. She left it here the other day. And I was like, Grandma, why? I was like, don't you dare lie to me. Are you reading 50 Shades of Grey? And she's like, keep your voice down, Lexi. And I'm like, Grandma. I was like, Grandma, it's fine. I've already read them. I was like, are you liking it? And she was like, I'll be honest with you, I like it, but I've had to Google so many words. Like, I don't know. Like, and I'm like sexual terms? And she's like, yeah, like, I didn't know what a flogger was. And I was like, Grandma!
Wait, a flogger? Come on, Grandma. You know what that is.
But she was like so embarrassed. She was like, oh my God, please, like, keep your voice down. Like, don't tell anybody. And I think it's a generational thing, because I was like, bro, I read 50 Shades of Grey like 8,000 times. Like, no shame.
I mean, you know, it's not really anything new. I mean, you know, yeah. Anne Rice was writing, you know, Blue Romance back when she was also writing the Interview with the Vampire books. And if you go even further than back, you know, you had Anais Nin and you know, Henry.
You had J.R. Ward.
Guys were like super raunchy. And so, yeah. I mean, you know, it's, this stuff's been around forever. It's just, you know, I don't know. We could probably get real super deep and philosophical about what that's all about, but your readers don't want, I mean, listeners don't want to hear all that unless they're fussing in there.
My last writing question to you is, what is the weirdest thing you've ever had to Google for a book? Back to the CIA thing.
Dang. You know, I think I meant to think about this and I forgot. Weirdest thing I've ever had to Google, and I've had to Google some weird stuff, especially lately. I've been Googling weird stuff, but what in the world might have been the weirdest thing? You know, I don't know. I'm sorry, I can't. I mean, like, I Google crap all the time, but it's like, it's like, I don't know. I do it and then I don't store it in my head. I just like incorporate it in and keep going. You know, it's kind of like drive by. Like, I got it. keeping going. But I've Googled everything from weird antiques to like poisons to, well, I told you, like how to run a con on a casino.
Yeah.
I actually had to Google how to win at roulette once. And so, I mean, I'm constantly Googling everything, like houses and what houses look like, and like,
oh, how to count cards.
Oh yeah. I mean,
yeah, like, 21.
I mean, I've Googled like how to use different BDSM things, because one of the books in the Dirty Players series, one of the characters is into that. And yeah. So I was like, it was so funny because, had another friend, Aletha Romig. I don't know if you know her.
She was
reading one of those books, and she was like, "Where did you find? Where? How do you know about all this?" And I'm like, yeah. "I know, right?" I always tease her. I'm like, she acts like she's my big sister. And she and me and Tara Civic used to be able to do stuff together a lot because we live really close to each other, and so we would say Aletha's the big sister, I'm in the middle, and Tara's the wild child, youngest. Yeah. But she was like, "How do you know about all this? Where did you find all this?" I was like, "Google." And then Amazon, if you go on Amazon, they actually have like kits, like BDSM kits that buy on Amazon. Anyway, I know it was crazy. But I mean, like I said, I have Googled all kinds of stuff. I've Googled things for pets, for little kids. Oh, brah.
I love it. I love it.
Been years of Googling. That's what I said. Destroy my hard drive.
Me too.
Destroy this hard drive.
So, Stevie, I'm going to let you take reading questions, and then we'll move on to trope questions.
Okay. So what book has your favorite cover?
Of mine?
Any of them. Yours. It can be any book that you read.
Or both.
That's a great question. There's so many gorgeous covers out there. You know, I really love both the, you know, some of the authors now are doing sort of these like, not using humans, like using like scenery covers. I saw one just the other day that I thought, that is so gorgeous.
Kaylee Ryan and Lacey Black are doing it with Beneath the Fallen Stars.
Yeah. I don't know.
And that is a colorful.
I'm actually looking right now, but, they're so beautiful. I really love all kind of covers. I really just love the really artistic ones that kind of really, you know, make you go, "Ooh, what is this about?" Like, oh yeah. My gosh, like Emma Scott's last cover with her new book, The Sinner, that just came out.
Yeah. That's
so gorgeous. And, you know, I guess if I were asking for my favorite cover of mine, probably Wait For Me, just because there's so much emotion in that cover, and maybe because I really love Travis, I want him on all of my covers. I swear to God, it's so funny. I'm like, I cannot put Travis on another one of my book covers. Like, who is he, which guy is he, which hero is he? Because it's like, I saw a picture of him, and Wander's always like, "You can never have enough." I'm like, no, I can have enough, and I do have enough, but I can't have five. But I just love them all. You know, if they're really like, if they're sexy and they make you say, "I want to know what's in here," you know, it's like,
yeah,
give it to me.
Love it.
So who are some of your favorite authors to read? This is your chance to pimp your friends.
Oh man, okay. You know, this is not cool because I've been around a long time. So I know a lot of people. You know, I swear it's just depends on what you're in the mood for. Like, I always know if I'm feeling like I want something really angsty and like messagey and like moving, I'll read like a Mia Sheridan book, because you know Mia, her books always just rip your heart.
Man, Archer's voice gets me every time.
So literally good. On my shelf, bro.
Even some of her books that I thought I wasn't gonna like, Mia, I love all of your books. And even some of her books that I thought I wasn't gonna like, I picked them up. Like, I'm trying to think of one that I thought, I'll just skip that one because I don't think I'm really into that. And I ended up loving it. It was the one that was set in like West Virginia, I think, and they were like mountain people, and the guy wanted to go to school, and
I know which one you're talking about,
competing for that same like scholarship or something. Remember that one? Dang it, I can't remember it. But it ended up, I thought, I don't know if I'll read that, and it ended up being so good. So I loved Amy Harmon's, I haven't really read, so I don't know, but I haven't read her historical and fantasy stuff, but I loved her when she was writing more romance, like Law of Moses. Remember Law of Moses? And like even before that, Infinity Plus One. You remember those books?
Yes.
By Amy Harmon, back when she was in that phase. Mm-hmm. I was reading a bunch of her stuff then, and I loved all that stuff. Of course, Aletha's the queen of dark, so I love all her dark stuff. And Tara's the queen of hilarious. And Harlow, Ray, who's my bud. All her stuff is so good. It's really, that's what I said. There's so many great authors, you know? And even like, if you're feeling like, really want something gritty, you know, yeah. I love like, all those dark books too, you know? So I don't know. I read all over the place. I'm not really one of those readers who's like, I won't read paranormal, because I'll read paranormal. I read those Ice Planet Barbarians and they were fun. And you know, so I'm pretty open.
Do you know what just like hit me? Okay. I have been sitting here for like the entire podcast trying to figure out who you sound like.
Oh,
okay. You have a very familiar voice to me. And I was like, who is it that she sounds like? You sound like, have you ever seen Friday Night Lights, the TV show?
No, I watched the first episode and it was so good, and I wanted to go back and keep watching it, and I don't remember why I did.
Are you talking about Connie Britton?
Yes, you sound just like
from Connie Nashville.
Britton, who is Tammy Taylor, Coach Taylor's wife.
I have to go. I love her. She is so gorgeous. She is so beautiful. I just love her to death. But
she's so beautiful. Like the way you just said beautiful, I swear to God, I was like, that's Tammy Taylor.
Well, you know, I'm originally from Baton Rouge, so it's probably that, because I'm originally from South Louisiana. And I think she's from Texas. So it's probably, you know, depending on what part, if she's from around Houston area.
Actually,
Baton Rouge, all those areas.
She was born in Boston, Massachusetts.
Oh, no.
But
you know what, that does make sense, because there's that Irish connection, and they say people in Boston sound like people from New Orleans. You know, I was trying to do that thing, but I suck at accents, so I'm not gonna do that.
I'm telling you,
that's probably what it was.
You need to go watch Friday Night Lights. It's on Netflix. They put all five seasons on
Netflix. So that first episode,
you'll fall in love with Tim Riggins, and then you'll want to write a story just about
Then I'll switch over. Ooh, which made me think sports romance. Ilsa Madden Mills, my bud.
Yeah, you know, I like her out.
She is the queen of
I love her sports romance.
Oh yeah, her stuff is so good. She's really great. So I know, that's what I said. So many great authors. How can I possibly just name one?
Do you prefer e-reader or physical copies?
I'm an e-reader now. When they first came out, I really didn't think that I would ever like want to not be holding a book. And now I'm like, God, books are heavy. They're not heavy, but I'm so used to that little e-reader now that I'm completely, plus you can bring so many books with you. Yay.
And it's like, you can take all of the books. You can take,
and you can highlight.
And I was always that child. I don't know who it was we were talking to, but I was always that child where my dad would go on like family vacation, and my dad would be like, two books. That's it. And I'm like, three.
How can I possibly pick
three? I was like, now as an adult, like we would go, like as an adult, like I think I went, like last year, we went on like a family vacation, and I obviously have my own things and my own apartment. So I was like, hey dad, look at this. You know what this thing is for? The whole thing is full of books. You know how many's in here? 10. You can tell me how many I can't take. Yeah,
it's like, it reminds me of that funny Gilmore Girls little clip that was going around where she had like all the books, and she had a reason for every book, and you know, her mom's like, but you don't need two novels, and she's like, well, this one is, you know, this kind of novel, and and it's like she has the whole thing thought out. This is book lover problems. It's like, well, maybe I'm not in the mood for a memoir, maybe I'm in the mood for this, or maybe I don't want fairy romance today, I want military.
That is so what neat. Was your last five-star read?
My last five-star read, whoo, that's a good question. Well, I get ARCs all the time. So I've had a lot of really good ARCs come through. I mean, really good stuff recently. I'm actually, don't tell. I'm actually pulling up my Kindle right now to see, because I just read something that I was thinking, dang, that was good. I'm right in the middle of Give Me a Reason by Al Jackson. Love it.
Me too. I'm reading it too. I'm so excited.
Oh, it's so good. I just love her. She's another, everything she writes, I can just love it to death.
But I can listen to her voice all day.
I know, they're so good. Well, I'm just gonna give a shout out to Harlow and say something like Hate is what I've recently read that was so good. I'm looking through all my stuff, and I'm like, well, I did read The Sinner, and I really loved The Sinner by Emma Stone. That was really good. It's paranormal, but it's like, Oh, it's so good. You just got to read it. Don't get turned off by that. Because, you know, I know some people are like, I won't read paranormal. And it's like, well, you're just freaking missing out, man. Because it's
I'm so a dark good. Romance reader. So
I don't know if they think they're going to be scared. I don't know. I mean, you know, but whatever. I don't want to beat up on anybody. Read what you want to read.
I'm a dark romance reader, so I like paranormal. So I have to add that.
Yeah, I love paranormal too. I had two paranormal romances that I wrote, and I was so proud because I loved paranormal so much that I was like, I'm never going to be able to write a paranormal romance. But I wrote one Immortal as like a Halloween present because it was set. It was like the One to Hold series as vampire romance set in New Orleans and everything. And I just really, it was kind of a passion project for me because I just really wanted to write a vampire romance. And so I did, and it came out and everybody really loved it. And so I was like, yay, I did it. Now I better stick to my brand. I love it. Now I better go back to writing what people are expecting from me. So, but it's fun. I love paranormal.
So now we are going to shift gears to our favorite section of the podcast, which is trope questions. However, it is the end of our podcast, which is very sad because this has been super fun. But what is your favorite trope to write and why?
Okay. So I've been thinking about this a lot because I have three different kind of guys that I typically write. You know, I typically write the really broody kind of, I have a lot of military, former military heroes. Mm-hmm. So I typically write the really broody kind of, you know, protector guy who's got this really soft spot for the girl, you know, everything. So, but he's kind of quiet. He's the strong, silent type, you know, and all that. And so I have either him or I've either got the scout who's like the charming, like fun guy who's super sexy and playful, which I also think is fun. Or then I've got this billionaire, which is related to guy number one, but the billionaire is more like, you know, like stay Steven and boss of me and that. They're a little more arrogant, a little more kind of dirty talking, a little more kind of, you're not going to change me. They can afford it. Yeah. They're the billionaires. They're like, you're not going to change me. This is who I am. Love it or leave it. And I love them getting taken down a notch. That crack. That's just like, love. That's catnip for me. Right. Especially when you find out that they've got like this wound that they've like not telling you that they find out. And then it's like, oh, you know, so I think that's my favorite right now. So the third one, the really arrogant billionaire, because he's like the first one but he's a little different, so I don't know, so that's where I'm at right now. But I change, you know, my loves kind of, it just depends. Sometimes I'll be like, you know, I really feel like a fun guy right now, and I'll write like, you know, Twist of Fate, because I'm like, I just want a funny, fun, sexy guy who you can just like jump in the truck with and sing Xanadu real loud, you know.
I love it.
So what is one trope you would eventually like to write and why?
Well, so I have done, like I said, I've done contemporary and all the subgenres, a bunch of subgenres in contemporary. I've done paranormal, romantic suspense. I've done cowboy. I have one, two books that are about the same couple, cowboy romance. I might go back to doing a cowboy romance at some point because I really liked, although this was kind of Montana horse ranch, big sky country, you know, that was one to leave and one to take in the One to Hold series. And I loved that. And I kind of love that whole like out in the wilderness kind of west, the big west kind of thing.
Love a man in some Wranglers and a cow.
Yes, and like a horse and like, you know, and you're just out in the wilderness and lakes and stuff. And anyway, so I might try to go back to that again. I have an author bud, Vanessa Vale, who is really cool. She lives in Colorado and she's always like, come stay. I've got a place and we can do like a writer's retreat. And I'm like, I might do that.
Do it.
That's something that I would really enjoy, but that's probably kind of a little bit down, maybe 2022. I don't know. Do it. That's a little down the road, but that would be fun to, I know you said never written, but, and I have written that once. So maybe going back, I know I've written a lot of stuff. I've written a lot.
So what is one trope you'll never write and why?
Well, I'll be honest with you, horror. And the only reason I say horror is because I'm a scaredy cat. Like my husband owns every single Stephen King book ever written. He has every one. He even has his, he even has the ones where he wrote under the other name.
Richard Bachman.
Yes. And the Dark Tower books, all that stuff. He is the total Stephen. Yeah, he has all of it. I mean, we have friends who like borrow his books and then bring them back and all, and they just nerd out talking about Stephen King books. And so, you know, when we first got married, I wanted to be a part of that world, right? So I was like, well, why don't you tell me, I love to read, tell me some of your favorite Stephen King books and I'll read them. And so he was like, here's what I'll do. So he had gotten the one with the short stories in it.
Yeah, his short stories are so good. So was it Nightmare and Dreamscapes, Skeleton Crew, Night Shift?
What's the one with the bloody cover? It's white and it looks like it's blood splattered. What's that? Is that the one I'm thinking of?
I mean, there were like a lot of them that were like recovered, but like his stories are Nightmares and Dreamscapes from Midnight.
Maybe if I tell you, it was a story about a truck stop and the person went into the truck stop and they were like followed into the, I'm going to tell you, I had to stop reading it. I was like, oh, I can't read this anymore. I was like scared to get out of bed and go to the bathroom. That would be me. I was like, I'm got to pee. And I'm scared to get out of the bed. So I was like, I can't read Stephen King. He's too scary. He's too good. He's so good. He's scared the crap out of me. He scares me. He's really good. He's really, really good. But I can't read his book. So
is it The Cell? Is that what you're talking about?
Is it? Any? Oh, and Richard's favorite is the one with the dog at the very beginning where the dog is killed. No, not Cujo. The other one. What's the one? And the dog, oh God, it's an early one. It's one of his like early ones. Oh, he's going to kill me. Is it Pet Sematary? It's not Pet Sematary. It's, oh gosh, what is it? Let me see. It's his favorite. It's got like a scary name too. That's not help, is it?
Is it a sun dog?
Stephen King books. Let me see. I'm going to look it up. I'm looking it up on Amazon so I can tell you. I can remember it. It's one of his really famous ones. It's, Dead Zone. The Dead Zone.
That's the one. Yeah. It's one of his early books. Yeah, they're good.
Yeah, that's Richard's favorite one. And he was like, you got it. This is my all-time favorite Stephen King book. And he gave it to me. I was just like, oh, and I started reading it. I was just like, oh, this is so,
I actually just went to Barnes & Noble and bought, he just released two new books, Billy Summers and Later. So I bought both of them. But this is something that your husband might find interesting. So, and people make fun of me for it all the time, but I don't even care. So I'm like obsessed. Like, I mean, this tattoo, like I have, and if you look up here, I have like a little lamp of like the balloon. I literally love him. Like if I ever met him, I'd probably have a heart attack, but I have, so
he seems super nice.
Oh yeah. When he was in college, when he was like just graduating and had just started writing, he wrote short stories in Playboy. And like, it's insane to me that Playboy even had like words, because I thought they were just like, you know, naked women. But no, he wrote short stories for Playboy, and I have the edition of, he wrote Word Processor of the Gods in Playboy, and I have that edition.
That's awesome.
It's magazine. It's
in, that's really cool.
It's in like a freaking glass thing. I don't even care.
That's really neat. Good for you. Well, you know, that used to be the joke. People would say, oh, I just buy Playboy for the articles.
And it's like, I did not know that it even had articles. No, I genuinely bought Playboy just for
for the articles. Yes. I really read it just for the articles. Oh,
swear to God. I couldn't get any just of the other articles. I mean, there were like,
just read it for those Stephen King shorts.
It really was, I swear. But I can't.
Not all the naked ladies. Just the Stephen King.
The other ones were like, they're like $250, because obviously they don't publish those
anymore. Yeah, I know.
So it's like $250 to get them. And I got that one for a steal on eBay for like
$80. Yeah, that's awesome. Good for you.
Keeping it.
Oh, that's cool. That's really cool. Well, you know, so yeah, so horror is probably it, and probably not really, you know, high fantasy. I don't see myself ever really writing like a Game of Thrones type of, even though I loved that show, just don't watch the last season. I really enjoyed it. It's just kind of not where my creativity goes. I mean, who knows? Never say never. Who knows? Maybe one day and down the road, 10 years or something, I'll be like, oh, I have a vision. But at the moment, I don't have a vision of a big giant fantasy world with, you know,
I love it.
Just not kind
of. So Stevie is going to take our last question. I literally just about stole it from you, but go ahead. Sorry.
If you were in a book, what trope would you want for your story?
Ooh, I was in a book. Well, you know, I would probably want to do the romantic suspense, like thriller, exciting, you know, high stakes. So that's it. Cause I like to do fun stuff. So I'd want to be like in one of those fun, like, you know, romantic kind of.
You're going to be a con artist who's like winning it.
Yes. Who gets hired to do a job in Monaco. Yes.
Yeah, love it.
It might be that that was my dream. And so I just wrote it down. I was like, I would love to do this. So I'm just going to go ahead and write it and pretend like I am.
Love it. So thank you so much for joining us. This has been super awesome. You have been absolutely incredible.
Thank you so much for having me. This is a blast. I love it.
Thank you. I'm going to let Stevie tell our listeners who day four is going to be. And I'm actually kind of excited for this because that means I'm forced to have to read this book. That's on my shelf.
All right.
So day four is Claire Contreras.
Oh, I love Claire. I literally.
So excited.
So her book, Fables and Other Lies, right? It's a running joke on this podcast because I'm a cover whore. Like, I'll buy.
That's a gorgeous book. Cover. Yes. She I does didn't even know really gorgeous covers too.
She's never even read it yet. She bought it based on the cover alone.
And I didn't even
understand that. I get that. Work. Yeah.
It's still just chilling. It's so beautiful.
It's gorgeous. You're right. Claire's covers.
I love it.
Too. Yes. Yes.
So we're super excited to chat with her, but thank you so much for joining us on our anniversary episode. This was awesome. And
thank
we're just really appreciative. So thank you. And we hope that you have a great day and we'll chat with you soon.
Okay. Thank you guys.